You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Bigi on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We are also heard live on the web at WWBC. Miss Ellen, take it away.
Yeah, 1510 WWBC, or actually 1510WWBC.com. You click the online button and you'll be able to, on demand button, you'll be able to hear us live right here on the station. And then you can also hear all of our past shows on CETA Media Inc. and also on Facebook.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So every Monday, Ellen and I have been together for the last 10 years. We have been doing a weekly radio show. It's called Viewpoint with CETA and Friends. We started off on Plucky Bum Road with a different company, Paul. Yeah. And then I was introduced to Paul, and we came here to WWBC, and we've had a really great working relationship with Paul, who is the producer of our shows. And
just keeping community radio alive.
Yeah. And you know what's great about Viewpoint with CETA and Friends is that we do understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And we try our utmost best on Mondays here to have a fun, unscripted, very educational and an informative show, whether it's talking about how to get a mortgage, how to open a business, how to register to vote, how to write a book. And of lately, we've had a lot of friends who are running for office. And so I had this idea, like a light bulb that went off in my head. And I was talking to my friend Joan, and I said, we should have a show on Viewpoint with CETA and Friends, just a show so that the community knows who's running for office and why. And I said, I'll sponsor this show so that my friends could come on and we can have a discussion about why they decided to put their hat in the ring and run for office, which is so challenging right now, especially with COVID-19 and all that's going on, Miss Ellen, you know. And so I ran in 2018. And I had sworn that I would help other people as well. And I know it's not easy, but they're all winners in my eye.
That's right.
Just for stepping up to run. A lot of people talk, and they talk nonsense. It's easy to sit behind a keyboard and judge others and write stuff. But these folks actually decided to fill out the forms, get their name on the ballot, and run for office.
That's right.
And that's commendable.
Well, like you said, it's not easy. You give up, there's a lot of sacrifice. You give up family time. You give up social time. You give up time with your friends. You give up a lot of things to support what you really believe in. And that's very admirable for all of you. And thank you so much for all being here and speaking your message.
Right.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So for our friends who are tuning in to Viewpoint with CETA and Friends, we have Lloyd Dabbs. And actually, I was calling him Lou Dobbs, but it's Lloyd Dabbs.
I am not.
You watch too much TV.
Yeah, you wouldn't be running for office, right? And so Lloyd Dabbs decided to run for a seat here. He is challenging the same gentleman I challenged in District 52 when I ran. He's challenging Thad Altman for this seat, Florida House, in District 52. Lloyd, welcome to Viewpoint with CETA and Friends.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad we finally met in person.
I know, I'm very excited, actually.
And then Joan Majid is here. And Joan and I met at a rally for immigration reform years ago. And I loved what she had to say. She was actually injured at that time. And she decided to have that rally anyways. Something with your leg.
Oh, my hip, yes.
Your leg, hip, something, right?
The day before, I had a hip replacement.
That's right, you went a wheelchair.
Yes.
So Joan Majid decided that she is a little fed up of the way things are being done in Tallahassee as well, particularly about education. And so she decided to throw her hat in the ring and run for state representative in District 51.
That's it. Yes.
And who are you running against?
I'm running against Tyler Saroy. He also lives on Merritt Island, as I do. And he has been serving his first term. And I'm just... I'm not satisfied with what he's been voting on and the way he's been things have been going. So I'm challenging him.
Good for you.
I am.
And Nina, we have to get you closer to your mic. Nina. It's Nina, correct?
Nina.
Nina Yoakum. She decided to run for the seat for state representative for the Florida House in District 50. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Isn't this wonderful, Ellen? We should have more people in town doing these kind of shows instead of having gotcha politics.
Absolutely.
Where you could invite somebody to come on a set and say, oh, I gotcha. It's not about that. It really isn't. It's about each and every one of us doing whatever we can. Find your purpose on earth to do something wonderful for humanity. And these folks are doing it. So we'll start off with Lloyd. So what made you decide to run for office?
Well, I think it was a few different things for me. You know, I retired from the Air Force in 2018 after 21 years. You know, ever since I was 19 years old, I was in the Air Force, so I didn't know anything different. So I retired out, and the America that I retired out of was different than when I joined, right? So it was the age of Trump. There was a lot of different viewpoints. It was so divisive. So I knew that I wanted to get involved into politics, but it wasn't until my 13-year-old actually started talking more about the environment, about healthcare, about fears that the leaders within the world really weren't addressing the real problems. That started to make me to think that I needed to do
a moral decline.
Well, absolutely. And so I knew that this was the time, as somebody who wanted to go into second service, this was the time that if I was ever going to do it, I needed to do it. Because I felt like I had a moral obligation to run right now in this time, because this is going to be an inflection point, I think, for the country. So everybody who's running is very brave to run right now.
That's right.
And so
times are changing.
Right. Absolutely.
And we better pay attention. So what's your background? I mean, I talked to you on Facebook and email and stuff, but I haven't met you in person. So I'm like, I wonder what. So tell us your background. Instead of me reading off the bio, you can just tell our listeners.
Sure. So I was in the enlisted ranks in the Air Force. You know, I'm from Santa Maria, California. My dad, you know, grew up in a house with a dirt floor. My mom was adopted. So we came from not much, but we built into a middle class life. I joined the Air Force in 1997. And I've been an intelligence officer for 21 years, both enlisted and as a commissioned officer. Served everywhere from Iraq to Democratic Republic of Congo for the United Nations. And now I do business development and for a defense contractor. And
thank you for your service.
Thank you so much.
I mean, you know, people complain about wearing a mask. If only they saw you guys in the heat and the sand with the kind of gear you had to wear out there.
Yeah, we have some good stories about people passing out in our gas masks. And we lived in Okinawa, Japan, and you'd go through some serious exercises. So we consider it our patriotic duty to wear a mask. To make sure that everybody's safe, especially our nurses and essential personnel.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And Joan, from what I've seen of you and your activism, Ellen, I'm not sure if you've met Joan before.
I'm not.
But she is very vocal about issues near and dear to her heart. And children are very, very near to your heart and education. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for office.
Well, originally, I am from Long Island, New York, raised in a lovely suburban neighborhood by a father who was a high school teacher and a mom who at the time was a traditional homemaker. I joined clubs when I was in school. I was always interested in community activities. My favorite club was the Social Awareness and Action Activities Club. So I guess that's where my activism started. I was a very successful elementary school teacher in New York City, which is the largest public school system in the country. I got involved with my union because during the time they were making huge cuts in early childhood education. So me along with many of my colleagues, we started to fight and advocate for early childhood education. I was in New York City for years. I worked in some rough situations. I saw children who were the children of heroin addicts and crack addicts, and the children came to my classroom. So I've seen a diversity of issues that even today teachers are facing. Nowadays it's not crack, it's more methamphetamine, opiates. We got problems. A lot of poverty, working poor. And when I moved to Florida and I saw the conditions in the public schools here in Brevard, I thought we could do better as far as funding programs, special ed programs, teacher salaries are abysmally low. I chose not to go into teaching in Florida because I just was shocked at the low salaries teachers got. So as time went on, my child that I had moved here with from New York got sick. He got cancer. And there I learned about the healthcare system, which was another thing. So the lack of coverage for all people, everybody should be able to afford healthcare. I saw that. I lost my son, he passed away from cancer, and then I got involved in an organization to help parents survive the loss of a child. And I became the leader of the organization, it's called the Compassionate Friends. So as I go through life, I find issues that I'm interested in, and I get involved.
Activism is the price we pay for being alive. That's how I look at it. You find a cause and you jump right in. And that's what you do.
Yeah, and I find when you're, regardless of what your issue is, when you jump in and you start working with others, it helps you too.
Yes.
And I'm always that kind of person. When I see a deficit in our society, I want to work.
Yeah, you find your purpose.
Right, and that's what brings me to running for the State House. I'm seeing issues with our education system. I can't take seeing the teaching to the high-stakes test culture in our schools. It's really destroying the nature of education. We're losing children before they even get out of elementary school because there's a lot of stress involved. Teachers don't have the freedom to teach to the child in the children in their classroom, and there's so many problems. Then there's the affordable housing issue, right here in Merritt Island, where I am. I see people living in the woods. There's families even living in the woods. It's just
right. I wonder if the fellow, the gentleman you're running against, if he sees all these issues here that you have just outlined.
I do find people see what they want to see. I have a good friend I was driving around with last week. She's an activist in certain areas. And I said, do you realize how many homeless people there are living here right now? And she's like, you know, I never noticed it. We were just driving around. We were actually delivering signs for my campaign around the area. And I said, I'm saying, that's a homeless person. That's a homeless person. And they're all over the place, and people don't realize it. You go to any of our local parks, you can see where they stash their blankets and their meager possessions under bridges during the day while they're out looking for food or trying to. Some of them are looking for work. People think homeless people don't want to work. We saw in a campground when my family took our RV to one of the Brevard County campgrounds, a few homeless families living in a tent. They rent by the month. And, you know, I struck up conversations with them. They were looking for jobs. They were getting bus fare together.
Yeah, we've had people on our show that talked about the homeless before. And so many people are living one paycheck away from being homeless.
Absolutely.
We've had Miriam Moore with the Brevard Homeless Coalition has been on. And so on our third guest is Nina Yoakum. And Nina, what made you decide to run for office in District 50 and who you're running against?
What made me decide to run?
Yeah, your background too.
And my background too. Okay, for office, I'll go with my background first because that makes chronological sense. I grew up with a politician for a father, and then I had a mother who was a nurse, so she was in the helping fields, and she always helped in all our extracurricular activities. She was always the head of everything, so I could never sneak off and go anywhere else because she would be on it. And my dad was also in a lot of organizations. He was very helpful person always. They both were, and they were mighty Democrats. And so although he ran for office quite a bit and I would help him in his campaigns, I never thought that was the thing for me. I just like to help people. I became a mental health counselor. And then I got married, moved up down here to Florida from Kansas City, Missouri. And I decided to be a temporary substitute so I could have my family life as well. And I was that for 8 years. And then the thing happened down in Marjory Stoneman Douglas on Valentine's Day when 17 children were shot. And it's that very day it started to affect my driving. My legs were shaking and my heart was pounding, and it was anxiety because I had children in school at that time. But I don't always think about me. I have a huge capacity for empathy, so I thought about all the children that were going to be keep coming into these schools and everybody who was having children and how we just cannot keep this happening. And so we got together and got a group together called Parents for Gun Safety. And we had about 9 people on that, and we got about 9 points to give to our state House representative, 50. And we took them to him, and instead of doing something to make gun safety better, he put a law together, a bill together to have guns in the teachers' hands in the classroom, which to me, my perception of that is that's idiotic. So let's try something else. So then the next thing he went forward and did was put conceal and carry on college campuses with the students, which I thought, well, what kind of abuse did I get from men on college campuses while they were drinking too much? So what will happen with guns in their hands? So I just thought that was equally as ridiculous. So I thought, well, he's not doing a thing with what we're recommending, so I think I'm just going to have to run for office and try to flip that seat. And that was the honest day that I decided I'm going to have to run for office.
So you do what Kamala Harris says when she complained to her mother about something. Her mother would say, do something. Yeah, yeah. That's basically what you did.
Sounds like every mother.
Yeah, exactly.
And only I didn't have the talk with my mother. It was a... do something.
Yeah, it's your intuition. Just know you had to do something. I mean, it's awesome that you guys decided to do this, because when I ran, I remember people saying to me, well, you're not white, you're not Christian, and you weren't born in America. So right away, you have 3 strikes ahead of you, against you, right? Against me. And I knew it, but I decided to run anyway, because I was also one of those people that said, I didn't agree with guns in the classroom either.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had so many shows about people being homeless and people wanting to be able to afford their health insurance and things like that. So I decided if I go to Tallahassee with personal experience and what I see in the community, I can make a difference as well. It didn't work out for me, but I'm certainly hoping in District 52, 51, and 50 that it works out for you all. And Ellen, I mean, and he's a veteran. One of these... Are you a veteran too? Who else? Just Lloyd Dabbs.
Yeah. So just to dive a little deeper, because it is only an hour show. Okay. It goes really quickly.
Yeah.
So Lloyd, why do you believe you're a better choice than Thad? And why do you say to Republicans who are hesitant, you know, what do you say to Republicans that are hesitant for voting for a Democrat?
You know, it's one of those things, as a veteran who's running in this district, I know that we have over, 12,500 veterans in District 52, but that's obviously not the reason I'm running. Thad Altman has been around a long time. He's been running for office since I was 6 years old. He's been running from office to office, and he really hasn't provided much for the people of District 52. So it was really evident during the pandemic how little we saw that our legislators were actually solving the problems that were exposed due to COVID-19. Healthcare, lack of healthcare, unemployment insurance, with which Thad Altman voted for the lowest unemployment insurance rates in the country. Everything from the economy, no economic response. It wasn't that just Thad Altman wasn't providing bad ideas. He was providing no ideas, and he wasn't really representing the people of District 52 during the greatest pandemic and economic collapse since the Great Depression. So all of those Republican voters that are out there that are considering a moderate Democrat, I'm very pragmatic in the way that I look at a problem. It's the military in me that says that I just want to solve a problem. There's no left, there's no right, there's no center.
And you listen.
Right, absolutely.
In order for you to figure out all these things, you have listened to people. So what do you think, I mean, I always wondered, why is he allowed to jump around from seat to seat? He was in the county commission, city council, now he's in the House, and he was some... I mean, aren't the people asking the right questions?
Let me tell you, the voters in Brevard County, in District 52 in particular, are some of the brightest that you will find anywhere. So they're very keenly aware that Thad Altman doesn't live in our district, that he doesn't really respond to requests for help in our district. I can't tell you how many hundreds of people that I knocked on doors would actually bring up the fact that they either did not know who Thad Altman was, or that they thought that he didn't do anything for District 52. So I think they're aware of it, but you have to break past those barriers, right? There's those stigmas out there that say you're a socialist, you're a communist, you know Nancy Pelosi. I can guarantee you I do not know Nancy Pelosi. We are not friends.
But what, I mean, you know what, I that really gets me, because this is the greatest country in the world.
Absolutely.
I was born and raised in a third world country, and I know plenty of people from countries all over the world. And we are so blessed to be here in the United States and work and live and contribute and pay our taxes. Why do you think all of a sudden the words socialism and communism is being thrown on the airwaves, on the TV, people you knock the doors and talk to, and they're associating you with people like that? Why do you think people are doing that?
I think it's the environment we live in right now, right? So the way that whenever there's an incumbent in office who wants to maintain that incumbency, they want to do two things. They want to scare you, and they want to make sure that the other side doesn't vote, right? So what we've seen is they want to divide both sides, and they do it through the Second Amendment. They do it through abortion. They do it through all of these wedge issues. When the fact of the matter is, for 98% of the issues that we have, we are all on the same page on. We all want good living wages. We all want people to work. We all want families to stay together. We all want good immigration systems. And finally, you were the first, and now with me, there are people who want to bridge that divide within District 52. And I think that we can do that this time around, because people have seen during COVID-19 that Thad Altman has been absent. He has not been here for the people of District 52, and that's why I'm running.
Or the business owners, for that matter. Oh, absolutely. If I could just add that in there, because there's a lot of people, a lot of business owners that are suffering in all of your districts, obviously.
But, yes.
You know, that's what I did for a living for 10 years, was help businesses grow and start and, you know, figure out their incomes and all of those things so that they can survive and survive these types of times as well, and give them options for those types of things. And none of the representatives have really come forth to figure out what needs to be done. You know, there's been one representative that had something about the restaurants business at Lou's Blues recently, and had a, you know, had
Randy
a big,
Fine.
Yeah, and had a big, you know, had a big conference, if you will, about that. But really, again, no outcomes.
Here's the thing.
And why
they're
have a meeting
hiding.
If there's
it's actually Brevard politicians who are hiding.
Right.
So, Joan, same question to you. Mm-hmm. Why do you think, number one, we have a lot of single issue voters who do vote according to the code words, you know, pro-life, patriot, build a wall, you know, the flag. People wrap themselves around these code words and they become single issue voters. Why do you think that happens?
I think a lot of it has to do with misinformation, and there's a plethora of it, especially nowadays when we've got 24-hour information or misinformation at our fingertips. I'm a little addicted to my phone, I will admit it. There's always something on social media, on Twitter, on this or that. Our president is like the king of social media, of Twitter. And people are reading sources that are not accurate. And I believe that people want to justify, regardless of what side of the spectrum you're on, people want to justify their opinion and feel that they're the right ones. And so they cling to media. There's so much garbage out there. I ask them, there's a chart, it's like a bell curve for left and right media, and I check it myself, and every year it gets updated, and it'll tell you where the mainstream is, and the more trustworthy, whether it's conservative or more towards the left. And then as you go out towards the ends, there's the stuff that's like really out there on the left, and I'm going to say both sides are guilty of it. People need to learn how to check to see if they're listening to reliable resources. I cannot tell you how many times we all see it. Someone says, but I saw it on Facebook. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but did you check the source?
Right, exactly.
And Nina, same thing for you. What I notice is, I think if folks just sat down with their community, your neighbors who live next door to you, the back, the front, the side, or the people that work directly with you, or people you meet at the gym, regular people, like Lloyd said, everybody wants the same thing at the end of the day. What do you think makes so many people right now in our world, in our universe, so hateful, so anxious? They just want to divide. What are they fearful about? Because once you talk to people, I have a lot of Republican friends, and we all see things. At the end of the day, we all want food, water, shelter, to invest, to send our kids to college, to have health care, to have a job. And I don't understand what's happening. What are you hearing in your district about all this division?
Well, to start that, sentence, I'm going to say my block is full of Democrats and Republicans, and I have 9 houses in a row on my street, and it tickles me pink. This is a bragging point, that every single house on my block has a NINA for Florida for 50 sign on it. And that's Republicans and Democrats.
Because you talk to them.
Because I talk to them. Mm-hmm. And some people tease me that I talk too much, but
I like to
go out and engage in conversation personally. And it's been hard for me with COVID not to be able to actually do that one-on-one, eye-to-eye, instead of over the phone, which isn't near as effective to me or them, I don't think. And but I think the fear is that they're losing control, and that they're going to lose control no matter who takes office. If it's not the person that they're going to be voting for, then they're going to lose control. And I think for people who love guns, their fear is that all their guns are going to be taken away.
Which is so wrong, because, Lloyd, you fought for us to have the right to bear arms.
You know, I get that question a lot, which is, thank you for your service, thank you for running, but how could you be a Democrat? Because of 2A. I will tell you, I own a gun. I'm a combat marksman. I know how to shoot many guns. And there are ways that you can reduce gun violence in Florida, at the same time make sure that we protect the Second Amendment, protect all of our amendments. So it's they're not disconnected.
Right. I mean,
so what are the other top priorities once you're elected? Maybe that's not a huge priority, but... The gun part.
So I'll tell you, protecting the Constitution is always, you know, the top priority. You know, I look at this president, some of the rollbacks that we've seen, as with every president, you want to be wary of constitutional protections. But climate activism and climate action is at the core of why I'm running. And why? Because my 13-year-old was scared about the Florida we're going to live in 50 years, right? With rising waters, with flooding, with an inability to respond to a resilient infrastructure that needs to be rebuilt here in Florida. What people don't really realize is that climate change and climate activism are actually integrated to every facet of our lives.
It causes a lot of people to flee their countries too.
It does, absolutely.
And people don't know that.
And there will be wars fought over.
Yeah. Yep. Same thing for you, Joan. What are your 3 top priorities?
Well, I had 3 specific priorities, and then COVID came along, and I realized the first thing we have to do is go up there within the new session, and we have got to have the strategic plan to recover from COVID. And if it's still spreading, we need to stop it, we need to fund it, and we need to make the regulations that we should have had, because certain places in the country are doing a lot better than we're doing. Then we're going to have to help with the economic recovery. Yep. All of these small businesses, they're folding, they're closing. And I drive through my neighborhood, my area, and it's like my favorite little restaurant is gone. It was a family-owned restaurant, and the kids, today's the first day, they're all going back to school. I'm concerned. One of my neighbors are going to the brick-and-mortar school. The other two down the street are doing their e-schooling. My son, who has been homeschooled, because I'm a teacher and I was a little more satisfied me doing it, he's continuing that. So he's having his happy not back to school day, but he's running, he's got his curriculum, and my husband's home helping him with it right now. But we have to look at how this is going to change us, because I don't think school will ever be the same.
Afterwards. Life is not the same.
Also, no.
How many of us have
people
to cancel
now?
Trips and things?
Right.
And what about you, Nina? You must have 3 top priorities as well.
And I'm going to ditto Joan. They started out with healthcare, and they started out with the environment, and then again they started out with gun legislation, common sense gun legislation, and now with COVID things have changed, and they had to. And I've gone through so many life experiences through this. I had a homeless brother, and he came back from being homeless to the house, and he has a aneurysm on his heart. And his days are numbered, and he's with hospice now. So now I'm jumping into more of the medical care than ever. And not just because he's my brother, but I've seen it, you know, through living where I live. Mm-hmm. but also because of COVID. But I've been affected by so many things. And my husband got laid off through COVID. He's not going back to work ever with this company. He's terminated. And for him to get a job at his age is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, because that's a whole show, age discrimination.
Yes, discrimination. And then we have to cover, I have to say, I want equality for all, including all Black people and LGBTQ. And that's huge with me, too. And you know, these Black Lives Matter came up big time over this thing with COVID. So, you know, there's just so many issues to address. I can't say top three anymore. It's like top six. You know, there's just no way to zero in on one.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break, Sita, so that we can kind of catch our breath and get some other ideas about what we want to ask these great candidates. If you are listening in, please tune in to Sita Media on Facebook, and you can type in your questions, and we'll ask any question that you'd like. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call 321-984-7345. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we just had a robust discussion about why my friend Loy Dabbs is running for office in District 52 for the State House. Joan Majid is running in District 51. And Nina Yoakum, my friend's name is Nina, and so it's spelled the same way, is running for a seat in District 50. So on the break, we were just talking about paying taxes and why the two words socialism and communism has been thrown around so much in the United States right now. And I'm going to start off with Lloyd with that. Why do you think Americans are all of a sudden, because really and truly, when we pay our taxes, we are paying for things like the roads we drive on, infrastructure, public education, public health, taking care of the elderly, the children, people who fall by no fault of their own and break a back and they're on disability, right? So people are actually saying that they're paying too much in taxes, but the truth of the matter is there are social programs that are covered when we pay our taxes.
Right. So when I take a look at the Florida economy in general, I just look at inefficiencies, right? So we're not here to raise taxes, or at least that's the way I view the Florida economy. So I call myself a Democratic capitalist specifically because...
Me too. You're like me. Yeah, you're right. Moderate Democrat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
Which is specifically, you look at the economy and you want to invest in the right thing so mm-hmm. that you can grow your economy the right way. And so when I look at the way that we need to invest, knowing that 98.5% of businesses in Florida are small businesses, so it's not the large organizations here in Florida that really drive our economy. It's our middle class, small business growth engine here in Florida. So that's why
hospitality being the main industry.
So specifically when you talk about the Space Coast in general, you know you want to invest in small businesses within 0 to 5 years. You do that because you want them to grow to be mid-tier businesses. For every dollar invested, you can get between $8 to $12 back in new tax revenue. That doesn't mean you cut taxes. It means you get new tax revenue that you can then spend on healthcare and roads and climate action. So that's why, and that's where I fundamentally disagree with a lot of the trickle-down economics that Republicans have failed on for 50 years, which is empower your middle class and low to middle income people, empower your small businesses by reducing their taxes, and you can grow your Florida economy so that we can make it larger than New York. We can do that within 5 to 10 years with a pro-growth strategy here in Florida.
Yeah, so there's nothing socialist or communist about that.
Absolutely not.
You're helping people.
So I have a master's degree in business, and that's where it comes from. It's
called investing in communities, investing in people,
right.
Investing
right.
in all zip codes.
Sure.
Right? And Joan, we've had this conversation before about immigration and education. People often say, well, I don't want my kid to go to this school because it's a bad school. Well, how about finding out first, why do you label it a bad school? Is the community good? Are people investing in the community? Do you have parents at home to help these children with homework? Do you have a prison reform, you know, activities at the, whatever you call it, prison reform? You know, people go to prison and they say, oh, well, let's have classes so maybe they can get their GED, they can have skills to get a job. So when they come back into the community, they can be part of the community. We often hear about the high school to prison pipeline. So before people label a school a bad school, there's a lot of things to think about why that name is a bad school. So how do we fix it?
Well, actually, as a teacher, I have seen people label schools all the time. And they'll also blame the teachers often. The school is a reflection of the community.
Right.
If you want to know what's going on in a community, ask any of the teachers teaching in the schools, and they will tell you, because that's where we get the kids who are the product of
the community.
What their family has and what their family doesn't have. And I'm all in favor of basically joining forces in the community. I've always had this dream of having community schools, which doesn't just mean we're doing the academics, but we're also providing the social workers and the health
Mental
health. Mental health care, which mm-hmm. is, to me, that is part of health care. Mental health affects your physical health and vice versa. I believe that we're not using our resources in the best way we can to serve our communities and our children. If we can, there was a model that I worked in up in New York City where we, there were outside agencies, but they were donating to programs for kids. So I taught at a public school. It was a very diverse, mixed school. They actually partnered with groups in our community, and they provided after-school activities where they had professionals who were social workers working there, and they were providing tutoring. So we were actually meeting a lot of needs. We were meeting academic needs. We were meeting a child care need for parents.
Probably nutrition, too.
Oh, they had healthy snacks.
Yeah.
They had games. So we were meeting socialization needs, academic needs. There were tutors there helping kids with their homework. We had sports activities. We can turn our schools into community centers. And I think they're being underutilized. That's something we can do. We have to look at the funds, do the most we can with
what we have.
And
get parents involved, elders involved.
Parents involved, community members. We have plenty of wonderful companies here who could have bridge programs between organizations. My husband, when he was teaching with they're gone now, United Space Alliance up at the Space Center, he's a retired engineer. He was in a mentor program where the employees of the company certain times a month would go and work with kids in one of the local schools. We need to have partnerships. We've got a ton of retired people here in our area also, and they're active. They're not sitting in rocking chairs. They're looking for things to do.
Right.
We can have them come into the schools supervised by the professionals working, but they can be sitting reading to a child. There's programs we're not taking advantage of.
So reallocate funds, too, would work.
Reallocating funds is right. very
so
important.
I know, Nina, you want to jump in here because, you know, with racial inequality being so prevalent today, how would you personally address this issue and find a solution?
Well, actually, that's a very difficult question, and it's been going on since JFK died, Bobby Kennedy died, Martin Luther King died. And if you ask me what I've seen in the last, since the administration of the president we have now, I have seen not a huge gain in that area. I think that people put on a pretty face sometime, but what I've found out from talking to people, even friends that I have had over the years are not the people I thought they were. They're prejudiced, and I did not know that. And so our friendships have changed because of that. But my parents, I was lucky enough to, I'm going to get this part over with really quick, but I was lucky enough to be raised by parents back in the 60s that were not prejudiced, and we had black people over at my house and it was normal to me, and we had Chinese people over at my house, it was normal to me. And then I went through busing, and so everything was normal to me because it wasn't normal to them, though. I found that out because I keep talking to them. They hated it, you know, they absolutely hated it. But I went through white flight, and we brought the teachers bused in, so I've seen what doesn't work. And and so I think it's more a time to talk to, let's just say, black people and find out what would work for you rather than what me, a white person.
Right, imposing your views.
Yes, thinks would work for you. Because I think back in the day, that's what we did. We did white superintendent of the schools, white mayor of Kansas City, white.
Like white is not always right.
Right.
Right. That's what they
right.
say. Yeah.
And we caused white flight, you know, basically by putting in an idea that we thought would be just.
Yeah, because they're brilliant minds in all neighborhoods, in all communities. All you have to do is reach out and grab it and have people get involved in the conversation. Mm-hmm. I know Ellen always talks about where she grew up. She was the only white girl.
I was one of 11 white kids in my school. And so I thought I was Puerto Rican until I was 6. So I had no idea with my white skin, you know, I had no clue, but it was like trying to fit in, you know? So I understand a lot of what's going, I understand a lot more about what's going on because I have a lot of friends that are you know, putting up the good fight and addressing the cause and addressing what issues they're having with it. And these are, you know, these are friends of mine that are nurses and very well educated people, but they see the discrimination in real estate sometimes and in banking and in loans. And
right.
In,
and we see how healthcare is affecting people disproportionately right now with COVID-19.
Yep.
And talking about fitting in, it's a very sad that any human being have to try to fit in.
That's right.
Because really and truly, at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. Food, water, shelter, and a
place to live,
right?
I just didn't
want to
get beat
right?
up anymore.
I remember trying to fit in because I was a poor child from a village. Right. I didn't have a pair of shoes till I was 12 years old. I remember trying to fit in to be that girl that they would pick on a team, and I was never picked because I was too dark. People didn't like me because I was poor. And I'll be like, when I grow up, you know, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to do this today. Or, you know, people would have a soda, a simple thing like a soda. And you're grieving for them to give you a little taste of it. And they share with their other friends. And you're watching that. And you're like, well, when I grow up, I'm going to drink a lot of sodas. Well, I haven't really drank a lot. But,
well, and now
you know,
it's so much
in
more.
Is a sad thing for right. a child and for an adult. So I think shows like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we try to show the humanity that we're all one. That it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or you're Christian or Muslim or Hindu or where you come from. It's about all of us actually having compassion and empathy for people, you know. And I know, Lloyd, I like that you have traveled extensively with the military.
Right.
And you have seen a lot. What do you think when people say things about the United States? I always defend it because I think it's the greatest country in the world, right? So there are people right now who are saying Democrats don't love the United States. Democrats don't care about the United States. What do you say to those people who are so, they're misinformed and uneducated because we do care?
Well, I think that's just maybe the loudest voice on the internet at the time. Mm-hmm. So most Americans know that Democrats, Republicans, Independents, whatever you are, you love America. When I traveled abroad, for example, when I lived in Africa for a year, I would deliberately not drive to base. I would walk to base through the slums. And my greatest protection that I had walking through the slums was one, this little kid. His name was Beely. He was 8 years old, so he guarded me. And then I had an American flag on my arm. And that was the only protection I needed. So people who love America can be Democrats. I love America, and I think because the loudest voices on the internet sometimes makes it seem like there's so much division, but then you knock on doors.
It's not only the internet, right. though. We see them here in Brevard driving around in trucks. We see people who are displaying a President Trump sign in their property, but the people next door who are Democrats are afraid to put up a Biden sign.
Right.
We see it in real life. It's not just the internet. So how do we say to our friends and our neighbors, we can be respectful and agree to disagree?
We have to take the chance to build bridges and talk to people that are, quote, on the other side. I don't remember growing up and having this kind of division. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and my father would say, well, those people are really liberal, and those people are this and that. And my father used to go back and forth between the parties and change. He was a social studies teacher, and he was balanced. But it wasn't like, oh, well, you can't play with those kids. It wasn't. They've turned it into, and I don't like to use this word lightly, but I see certain characteristics of cults in some of the people who become extreme like this. And it could happen on both sides. I am not saying everybody on the Democratic side is perfect.
Well, we've seen the far left, and we have seen the far right. And the people like Lloyd and myself and you and I, we are in the, I mean, it's good. I think being in the middle is good. A little bit left is fine. A little bit right is fine. But really and truly, what is actually left and right? They really, when you think about it, people want to wake up every day. Like I always say, brush your teeth, comb your hair, take a shower first. You want to go to work and have a job so that you could feed your family, so you could have things in life. So what is this about who's left and who's right? I don't understand why people are dividing humanity. Naina, you could take that. What do you think is causing such divisions right here in Brevard, to where good people running for office with a D behind their name is have to fight twice as hard to be heard and seen, because and you're fighting for the right things?
Well, I think the way to get over that, and I'm not always the best at it, but I think it's to talk calmly and to have a voice of reason and use common sense. And I'm going to give a example of the veterans. My dad's been a Democrat and run for office all his life, but he was in the Navy and the Air Force. And I have told Lloyd, but he was the first flight surgeon because he was also a medical doctor for the fabulous Thunderbirds. He is as Democrat as you can get, but he can cross the aisle in a New York second. Mm-hmm. And when we were growing up, I thought all my friends were the same as I was because we had Republicans at our house constantly, and I didn't know that their families were different. I'm finding out now under this last 4 years that they're not the same party I'm from. And they're calling me and telling me that and say, there's an elephant in the room and I need to talk to you about it. And they're telling me for the first time, I'm not a Democrat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're not? But I've had these friendships since we were 10 years old, you know, so we're trying to work past it.
Well, the politics we're watching is dividing families.
Yes.
It's dividing friends. It's dividing neighborhoods. And I really hope if one thing we can share with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today and take away from our show is politics shouldn't divide humanity. You can believe what you want to believe. If you're pro-life, you're pro-choice, you want to invest in a certain place, you want to live in it, whatever you want to do, you should be able to do it, but just don't hurt other people in the process.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because you're running for office, Lloyd, because you want to go to Tallahassee and be a voice for the people here in Brevard County, Florida. And what are some of the things when you get to Tallahassee that you would like to see happen differently?
Well, you know, I want to bring morality back to Tallahassee and to politics. Maybe I'm naive in thinking that politics can be pragmatic and objective and that there are good people mm-hmm. that need to run. That's why I've been pushing initiatives for more veterans to run, because I think that we need to show that there is the possibility for a second service of good people to run in Tallahassee. But I also want to show the people of Florida that you can get something done, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just about making a promise every 2 years, like Thad Altman does, going to Tallahassee, passing some weak legislative reform, and then going dormant for the next 2 years. It's about passing real comprehensive reform from healthcare to economics to climate to protecting our teachers that are starting back this week. These are real complex issues that require serious politicians that will get stuff done in Tallahassee. And because I'm not used to failing in the military, you're not supposed to fail, right? So it's absolutely job number one to get there and follow through with what I say. So my platform is my legislative agenda. When I get to Tallahassee, that's what we will work to pass across the aisle.
Right. So you have healthcare through the VA.
I do, yes.
Right? What is your stance on healthcare? Because we had the national candidates. We had people running who wanted Medicare for all.
Yeah.
And now we had Bernie Sanders running on that and so many other candidates. And now we have Joe Biden, who is our nominee and with Kamala Harris. And their platform is more or less to have the public option. Now, I read yesterday where they want to have a public option, not just for Medicare, but for Medicaid as well, mm-hmm. because there are people who do want to keep their private insurance.
Sure.
Like, I work for a good company, and I have great insurance. What is your take on that if you get to Tallahassee?
So, very quickly, I'll speak to my backstory on why I'm so passionate about healthcare. My mom was 64 when she died of a heart attack. She was 1 year shy of Medicare. She was using an emergency room as her doctor. So she died, and so that at the time I didn't have a lot of money to even pay for her health care. So I know that we need to expand Medicaid here in Florida. That's a no-brainer. There are offset costs that allow you to not only expand your Medicaid with federally funded dollars, but at the same time put more dollars back into the low to middle-income people's pockets. At the same time, I do believe, just like you, I think that there should be a public and private option for every single person within Florida. I'm not a fan of Medicare for all. However, I think everybody should have an opportunity to have affordable health care. Right, absolutely. Right.
And what about you, Joan? Because we've spoken about people who fall into the gap. We have 6 minutes left.
I'll tell you my story. My husband, he was one of the casualties of the space shuttle closing, and when you get to that certain age and you're in your 50s, it's hard to get another job. And he, during that transition. He was working contract work, meaning you show up as an engineer, but you do your work, but there are no benefits. He happened to have a stroke during that time, and it was the first time in both of our lives we did not have health insurance. It was bad. And, of course, I had to make all the decisions while he was in the hospital. Luckily, in order to go to a nursing home for his rehab, I had to pay for a whole month's the cost for the physical therapy and every day there ahead of time because we had no insurance at the time. And luckily, after several weeks, he did get the Medicaid for disabled
people. He would have benefited from the ability to either buy into Medicare,
yes,
or buy into Medicaid.
They offered
which
him
is
COBRA,
what Louis talk, Lloyd is talking
right,
about and
right,
myself, right?
COBRA you can't afford when you're laid off from your job. It's extremely expensive.
COBRA, yeah.
That was the only thing he was offered. We got to get rid of COBRA. People
right.
can't do that when they get
well,
laid off.
Well, Nina, what about you? Because I mean, I speak with a lot of people, and mm-hmm. I can tell you there are people that qualify for Medicaid. Their children have Florida Kid Care. There and there are others that have that gap where they make a little too much to qualify for Medicaid. Well, those people are saying, let me buy into it like any other insurance. Why shouldn't they?
Right. So the question itself again would be what?
What do you think about people buying into Medicaid, buying into Medicare? And if you, when you go to Tallahassee, what would you be legislating for when it comes to healthcare? What is your platform on Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance?
It's right where I'm at right now with my husband. And we're buying into Medicaid and Medicare right now because we got fired. And he didn't have anything, any insurance anymore. And so that's what we're doing. And I think that, you know, and I see my dad at 94, what he didn't have, and when my mom, what she didn't have, and what the bills were for her prescription and his prescriptions, and they got evicted out of their house because this was before COVID, because their medical bills were so high. And that's what happens when your medical bills get so high and you live a lot longer than you ever thought you were going to live,
yeah,
and you didn't save long enough for that. And that's happening more and more and more.
I'm a regular American. So we have 2 minutes left. We're going to go around and say, your 30-second speech for, say somebody meets you in an elevator, and they say, Lloyd Dabbs, what made you run for office? Give me your 30-second speech.
So I'm running for office for your kids. I'm not running for anybody in the room, as sad as that sounds. I'm running for my 13-year-old. I'm running for my neighbor's kids who need to have a better future economically. From a healthcare perspective, they need to have world-class education. And they need to have a world from a climate perspective that they can grow old into. And that starts with serious adults that are going to legislate to save the next generation of Floridians.
30 seconds, Joan.
I'm running because I'm frustrated with the status quo. There hasn't been change that the people need for that in our community. There's a growing number of people falling through the cracks. We have a magnified problem due to COVID. And we need to get back on track with our...
And Nina, your 30-second speech?
I'm running to answer to my constituents, and I'm going to vote for what my constituents want, not what I want.
Represent the people.
Represent the people 100%.
Lloyd Dabbs for District 52.
That's right.
Joan Masjid for District 51.
51.
And Nina Yoakum for District 50. You guys are fabulous, and you're all winners in my eye. Thank you for representing the people in your district and for running.
And all of their websites are posted on our CETA Media Facebook page right underneath the post for today's show. And thank you all once again. I mirror CETA's thanks and for all of the things that you're doing for our community.
If you
as
Google
well as
their
the
names, their websites come up.
Websites are right
and
on.
And you could volunteer, you could donate, you can do whatever it takes, time, energy, effort, ideas, and money to help these great candidates go to Tallahassee and make a difference for the people here in Brevard County.
And if you're not registered to vote, please make sure that you do that. I don't know if it counts for this year, but you certainly can make sure that it counts for next year.